I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, August 3rd, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact show. A lot to talk about on this one, and not much of the, I'll be honest with you, not much about this show I liked. I am Mike McMahon. I'll be joined in just a second by PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. You can join us at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. We'll bring in Andrew Socek now. And Andrew, I don't know about you, but I want to apologize in advance for being in a bad mood. This show put me in a bad mood.
I'm with you, man. That was rough.
Yeah, there's I feel like sometimes we're overly critical, and I always try to be cognizant of, hey, I don't want to hammer things too much because you don't always know where they're leading, and things could be going in the right, could be going in a different direction, and they're just setting things up. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, there was a lot on this show that made me angry. One thing in particular, which I'm sure we'll talk about. In fact, we should probably start talking about it. The video package they aired on Bobby Lashley with American Top Team. I thought some of it was good, but there was just some inexcusable things in that video package. I'll just come right out. I'm trying to look up the gentleman's name. There was a fighter, I believe it was Charles Rosa, who, if you miss the show, if you didn't see the show, basically they had a video package where they acknowledged that the coaches from American Top Team wanted Bobby Lashley to only focus on MMA. And they interviewed, I think Dan Lambert was his name, who's the owner of American Top Team. He was making the point that they, you know, Lashley needs to consider just going with MMA if he wants to be the best in that sport. They interviewed King Mo as part of the video package. And King Mo, I thought, did a good job. King Mo talked about how taxing pro wrestling was. And I think what he meant to say, although it didn't really come across this way, I think the point he was trying to make was, if he needed to choose, he needed to choose because of how strenuous and how difficult pro wrestling is. He also said that he thought Lashley could do both. But I think that King Mo was trying to make the point that wrestling is so difficult that if American Top Team wants him to choose one, that's why. Then they had a fighter, Charles Rosa, who made the point, again, that he's a big Bobby Lashley fan. And I'm trying to pull up the quote, because this blew me away. And I'm fine with them acknowledging that American Top Team wants Lashley to go with just MMA. I mean, that's a real thing that's happening. That's fine. But here's the quote. Here's the quote from Charles Rosa. I have it sound. Do I have it in here? I thought I had it in my report. Here it is. Rosa said, and this is a direct quote, "Wrestling is what it is. We're real fighters. We go here and put the work in. I know wrestling has the same thing, but this is real fighting." How did they allow that on their television?
That's completely idiotic. Like, whoever directed that segment, I don't know if it was Jeremy Borash or whoever, I don't get why right then and there they didn't say cut. You can't say that.
Like, exactly.
And then how did that go to the editors? Yeah, yeah. How did that go to the editors and then pass? And then how did that go to, I don't know, Jeff Jarrett or Dutch Mantel, whoever okays that? I just blew my mind that it went through so many levels and so many channels, and that they think that is okay to tell you, hey, that what you're watching is fake and real fighting is MMA. Just completely inexcusable, completely takes you out of the show. It's even worse than like WWE putting heels in their charity videos, and that drives me up a wall. But yeah, just one of the dumbest moments of the year for TNA Global Force Wrestling so far.
You're right, and that's what it did. It took me out of the show. I mean, the Grand Championship match, I think, came right after this, and I couldn't even focus. Like, it's essentially you're calling your audience a bunch of idiots. Like, look, we know this is not – we know they're not in there trying to kill each other. We know the matches – I mean, we know what pro wrestling is. We're all adults here. But in the 2 hours that – if I'm a fan, the 2 hours that I'm watching the show, I don't want to be told – hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, what you're watching isn't real. Like, we know it. Entertain me. You know, the point is we're here to watch a show. We don't need to be told that what we're watching isn't real fighting. We know what it is. I couldn't get over it. Like, it really, I think you hit the nail right in the head. It takes you out of the show because for at least the next half an hour, I was stewing about it, and I just couldn't believe that, like you said, not only did whoever directed not say at the time, hey, we got to do this again. You can't say that. Not only did that not happen, but how many channels did this have to go through without anyone saying, hey, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best idea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, right now, like, my two favorite shows are Twin Peaks and Game of Thrones. And at no point in those shows does anybody pop in and say, like, hey, you know those dragons aren't real, right? That's just a green screen, you know? It's just wrestling cannot get over that. And it just drives me crazy. Just pretend for 2 hours that it is real. Like, it goes back to the Attitude Era, but they've never gone past that. You know, it goes back to Russo and Ferrara thinking it would insult our intelligence. And Russo, as far as I know, is not there right now. I hope he's not. But yeah, they just, again and again, just will not let you get involved as much as you want to.
And that's the problem. It's like, look, if people are watching the show, they want to suspend their disbelief and get emotionally involved in what you're putting on television. Like you said, we don't need – I know there's been an argument. The Russo argument was, well, we're not going to insult the fans' intelligence. So we for some reason, he thinks that not insulting our intelligence is by telling us week after week that what we're watching is scripted television. We get it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I honestly rewound it on my DVR when it first happened because I said to myself, there's no way – he just said that. And I think I think the intentions of it were good.
I had the same reaction.
Yeah. I mean, I think the intentions of it were okay. I think they're acknowledging what is a real life story. I'm sure there's members of American Top Team that want Bobby Lashley to only focus on MMA. But it's that line, or that quote that I had the biggest issue with. The rest of the video package, honestly, I was fine with. I mean, Dan Lambert is an MMA coach, so him wanting Bobby Lashley to focus solely on MMA is understandable. And the fact that GFW was going to acknowledge that on their TV, again, understandable. We all know that Bobby Lashley is an MMA fighter. We also, of course, know that he's a pro wrestler. I thought King Mo did it right. I thought if you were going to do a video package like this, King Mo was doing it the right way. He was putting over the pro wrestling product. He talked about how, I think he said something to the effect of, you know, we're talking about elite athletes and it's very taxing on your body. I think King Mo was trying to make the point that pro wrestling is so difficult. That's why the people here at American Top Team want Bobby Lashley to only focus on MMA. Because King Mo almost was like trying to make the argument that pro wrestling is tougher than MMA. And that's why they don't want him to do it. That message I would have been completely fine with, because you're putting your product over, you're putting yourself over. Allowing that quote, though, where, you know, wrestling is what it is, but this is real fighting. Like, okay, why don't I just turn my television off then? Let me know when Bobby Lashley's fighting for Bellator again. I'll go watch something else. I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I thought the video was well done, except for that. But the whole concept also confuses me, because within the world of professional wrestling, if you take that narrative as its own, as it's real, what makes that different than MMA? You know, like, why couldn't one person do both? It's still fighting. I mean, I know they don't do body slams, but then you're opening up this whole Pandora's box, like, oh, well, why don't they do, you know, spears and body slams and snapmare takeovers in MMA? So I just think it's a realm you don't want to get into at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with that, too. If you wanted to just stick with your product and talking about your own show and your own narrative and your own universe, for lack of a better term, totally fine with that. And in fact, I think that that clearly that was a better route to go than the route that they took. But I don't want to get too angry about this, because there's plenty of other things on this show that made me angry.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the main event. And again, if you want to talk about that Lashley video, anything on this show tonight, or anything GFW, give us a call at 515-605-9345. We already have a couple of people on hold. We're going to get to phone calls in just a minute. But let's talk about the main event angle. In the main event, it was a six-man tag. It was Alberto El Patron and his whole family, his brother and his father, against LAX, Santana, Ortiz, and Homicide. Conan had been teasing all night that there was going to be a new member of LAX. That new member ended up being Loki, who ran in through the crowd. He hit the double stomp on El Patron while he had, I believe, Santana in the cross arm breaker, and that allowed Santana to get the win for LAX. What were your thoughts on the execution of the match and the angle where Loki is the newest member of LAX?
So if we go back last week, probably half of what I spoke about was ranting about how stupid it was that Alberto El Patron beat up all of LAX. 'Cause I'm like, well, that's pointless then to have a tag match. And that's exactly what they did tonight. So that entire thing felt pointless to me. I didn't like the setup of, ooh, maybe his brother will turn on him. I don't know who his brother is. We don't, you know, he shows up two times. Like, why should I even care if he turns on him? So that was silly. Man, Homicide having to sell for a 66-year-old man was ridiculous. The only thing I like, I guess, is Low-Key joining the group. I thought that was good, probably about the best they could have done. But otherwise, everything around it, I'm just so tired of this angle. And that stinks because, you know, over the past few months, I've really been talking about how much I've enjoyed LAX. But man, this feud is just dragging them down. What did you think about it?
I sort of agreed. I mean, I got by with Homicide having to sell for Dos Caras, because at least, you know, at least he has the mask on. He doesn't look like he's a 66-year-old man. At least the facial features don't, because you don't see it. But still, if you know, you know. You know, Alberto El Patron isn't exactly 18 years old. So if it's his father, I mean, simple math would tell you that he's an old guy. I thought the match was okay. I don't know where they are going with this, though. You know, that's the thing. I mean, it just seems to me, it very much feels like it's the same thing week after week. There hasn't been a whole lot of evolution to the story. I mean, there's a new wrinkle tonight with Low-Key joining LAX, but it just seems like for the last couple of weeks, it has just sort of been the same thing over and over again. It's starting to get very stale very quickly, and I don't know how long they plan on dragging this out for. I don't know what the conclusion they were going for. I don't know. You know, we don't know if El Patron's going to be able to come back and finish the story. I think he will if you read reports, and it doesn't look like he's going to be charged in the airport incident. So I would imagine he'd have his suspension lifted and he'll return to the company, I would guess, in time for their next set of TV tapings later this month. But I still feel like they need to get away from El Patron altogether. I don't know if it's just him his involvement that's making this just feel very blah to me and kind of uncomfortable, but something isn't connecting. I don't think I'm the only one that feels that way either.
I completely agree. I don't even see him as a baby face anymore. Like, you know, not looking at it from a critical perspective, it's like, oh, I don't want to cheer this guy. He's not that interesting. His best years were 7 years ago. He's constantly in the news. LAX is young and fresh. I would like to see Low-Key treated seriously and go against El Patron, you know, for a, you know, some sort of live special or pay-per-view. Like, that'd be great, but I don't see them doing that. I see him continuing to massacre LAX and just coming on top of this thing. And it's just like you said, it already feels like it's run its course. I'm just,
yeah.
I want them all to get away from each other. And also, where were the veterans of war? Like, you know, last week they came out to save them. This week they just don't care, I guess.
I guess not, yeah. That was another, there was a few things like that that I, okay, I guess we're just forgetting about this sort of stuff. And I actually forgot about the veterans of war, but there was a couple of times in the show where it's like, well, what about what happened last week? And we'll get to it when we run down the show, I'm sure. But there was a couple of instances here where it was like, well, what about this thing that they've been teasing for the last, you know, 3-4 weeks that just never happened or whatever. All right, well, you know what? Let's go to our first commercial break. And when we come back, we'll get to some phone calls because we've already got some people lined up at 515-605-9345. Andrew and I will run down the rest of this show in a little bit. We've got some other topics to talk about as well. And then our top three tonight, later on in the show, our top three are three trades we would make between WWE and GFW. These are trades that we're trying to benefit both sides. So we'll unveil our top three trades and our top three segment later tonight. And then also after this show, if you're a VIP member, Andrew and I will have a VIP after show. We started that a couple of weeks ago. We've had at least a 20 or 30 minute VIP after show each of the last 2 weeks. Tonight we're going to talk about the fallout from John Cena and Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown Tuesday. We talked about that match on last week's VIP after show. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Universal title at SummerSlam, Brock Lesnar and John Jones, and what that stuff can mean for WWE. There's a lot of MMA pro wrestling talk tonight, especially with the Lashley video earlier. So let's go to a break. We'll come back with phone calls, and then we'll get to more GFW talk right here on the PW Torch livecast.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
All right, back on the PW Torch livecast, I am Mike McMahon. He is Andrew Socek. We are talking GFW and Impact, both about anything about the show you want to talk about. There's a lot to talk about on this show, or just the company in general. We're going to get to your phone calls at 515-605-9345. And up first is Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
A little frustrated, yeah. But otherwise I'm fine.
A little angry, I think.
Yeah.
But doing okay.
Count me among those people too, guys.
Oh, good.
So, my first question concerns Bruce Prichard. Can we count everything we saw tonight as the beginning of an angle which will force Bruce Prichard off of television, by Bound for Glory, or at the beginning of next year when Global Force moves to whatever network they might be going to?
I don't know about you, Andrew. I legitimately have no idea where this Bruce Prichard thing is going. He didn't show up at Slammiversary, and then they ran a video online where he tells Karen Jarrett that her husband knew where he was, and now I think he's a heel now. The Grand Championship match, you know, the decision over scoring the last round for EC3 10-8, not allowing Sanjay Dutt to get back his own title. I think he's a heel. I legitimately have no clue where they're going with it. Andrew, any thoughts on where they might be going with this Pritchard thing?
Man, he was all over the show tonight. I counted like 5 segments in a row. He was either in or they were talking about him. So he's kind of becoming this all-encompassing figure. I think I lean towards them giving him like a heel stable, I guess, with Trevor Lee, Tyrus, maybe Ethan Carter. Yeah, I don't see him going anywhere just because of how heavily they're investing in him right now. I don't know why, because I just don't get the benefit, because if you listen to Something to Wrestle With, he doesn't plug Impact. So it's like kind of this weird one-sided partnership, because, you know, he wears little shirts. His entrance video is that Something to Wrestle With. So it's, I don't know. I see him sticking around for quite a while.
Yeah, well, how about you, Colin? Do you think I sort of get the impression he's going to be around. I don't know if they'd end up taking him off television. I don't know why they would at this point, but I also don't know where any of this is leading either. There really hasn't been any clues that I've picked up on that have been dropped yet.
The only reason why I even came up with this question is, if you notice, at about the midpoint of the show, we had that backstage segment with Karen Jarrett where Bruce very angrily said to her, "Karen, I need to talk to you alone." So,
oh, that's a good point.
I'm thinking Jeff might have drawn up some form letters saying if Bruce continues to make up arcane rules for matches or continues to try to stop Sanjay Dutt from getting his belt, he will be suspended or removed from the company altogether or something like that.
Yeah, I had actually forgotten about that. That's a good point. You know, it also makes me wonder, does Bruce's sort of involvement with Karen and they haven't really been bickering all that much, but they've been involved in some segments together. That's one tonight that you pointed out. And I know right after Slammiversary, when she questioned where he was at the pay-per-view, he said, you know, why don't you check with your husband? He knows where I am. I wonder if Bruce's involvement and whatever this is leading to is somehow leading to Jeff Jarrett returns to television. I could see that. I could see that happening.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay. Question number 2 is on the Super X Cup. Did Drago not win his Super X Cup match tonight because he is still under contract to Lucha Underground, and if not, why do you suppose he did not win?
You know, I think they're just trying to build up Desmond Xavier. They did some video packages on him back before the tournament started. He's the one guy that they can build around right now, I think, in the tournament anyway, that really hasn't been discovered or touched elsewhere. You know, he's not a AAA guy. He's not a Pro Wrestling Noah guy. He's not somebody who's been in Impact for a while. It sort of feels to me like they're just trying to build a new star. I think he's going to win. I think Desmond Xavier is going to end up winning the tournament. And it just feels like they're trying to maybe build something new with a guy who hasn't really been on TV before. Andrew, what were your thoughts on that match and why the finish went the way it did?
Yeah, that's my guess too. I mean, I don't know if he's under I don't think he's like under a long-term deal to Impact, because when he comes out, it's the AAA you know, logo on his screen. So yeah, like you said, I think Desmond Xavier is probably somebody they just want to invest in. And I think in his first match, they said how he was going to be the future of the X Division, you know, something along those lines. So yeah, I think they're just wanting to protect him, and him winning is my guess as well. The match, it was good. I wish they would have saved that for the finals, actually, because I'm a big Drago guy as well. So I think that would have been interesting. But overall, it got the night off to a good start.
Yeah, me too. I almost wonder with Ishimori in the other semifinal next week, if he wins the other semifinal and then Xavier beats him in the finals, and then the story coming out of it is, you know, Desmond Xavier beat both, you know, a AAA guy and a pro wrestling Noah guy, two international stars, as a way to even more so build him up a little bit coming out of the tournament.
And my final question concerns Global Force's overall product. With 2 weeks left until the assumed official rebranding into Global Force Wrestling, how would you evaluate the booking performance of Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel so far, since they've been brought in, and have you noticed any redeeming qualities that make you look forward to our assumed official rebranding on the 17th at Destination X?
What do you think there, Andrew? How would you, I guess, grade their performance so far?
I would probably go a D. a couple months ago, I probably would have gone like a B minus. It seemed like there was a plan in place. People were coming in. There was more excitement. And now they're just like hit a lull and random things happen. They're doing random take matches. I'm not interested in Alberto El Patron. There's just, yeah, a lot that's not clicking. The only saving graces for me is really a re-emphasis on the X Division and the fact that I guess Trevor Lee is getting a little bit of a push. And nothing is really standing out. So I would probably go a solid D right now. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's a good grade. I agree with you, though. Earlier on, Kylan, I thought they were doing a much better job. I was sort of in the same camp as Andrew, where probably I think the best episodes that they had, and I'd have to go back and make sure my timeline is right, but the last two or three episodes right before they went to India, and even the first couple of India shows I thought were okay. I think the last two or three, the ones that ended up being the go home to Slammiversary weren't particularly strong, but right around there. So that would have been, you know, probably late April into May. I thought they were really hitting their stride and doing a real good job, and the shows were good and they were, you know, paced well. Since the India shows and then coming out of Slammiversary, there's been too many things that just leave me scratching my head. Both the decision to go with El Patron, some of that, and, you know, to be fair, some of that I think is the residual effects of what's happened in his personal life that they really had no control over, because it happened after they wrote the shows and after they recorded the shows. But still, you know, we've talked about it at length here in the past on the show. There was a buyer beware with Alberto El Patron. This is not the first issue he's had. So I don't think that they necessarily deserve all the blame for the, you know, the residual effects of what pushing him has made their product feel like. But I also don't think that they don't share any of the blame. You know, they don't share all the blame, but I also don't think that they're blameless either. So I don't really know what to think as they go into this rebrand. I mean, I feel like we've had a couple of times now where we've been told or been expecting like the finality of the rebrand to become official, and it keeps getting pushed off little by little. So I mean, now I agree with you that now the 17th at Destination X is supposed to be the official one, the one that's finally sort of the rebrand, but you know, it just seems a little strange. I feel like we've been waiting for this for a while, and it's come in stages.
Yeah, agreed. Kylan, out of curiosity, what grade would you give them?
Between C- and D, like you guys, I would say.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. Anything else in your mind?
Nope. That's it, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right. Sounds good, Kylan. Thanks for the phone call. You know, I was going to go. Actually, no, let's go to another break. We got to go to another break. And then when we come back, we'll hit more of the phone calls here at 515-605-9345. If you're on hold, stick around. We're going to get right to more phone calls in just about 1 minute. So stay on the line. We're going to get to more of your calls here on the PW Torch Livecast post GFW show.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, we're back here in the PW Torch Livecast, 515-605-9345. He is Andrew Socek. I am Mike McMahon, and we're going to go right back to the phone calls. Area code 985. You're up next here on the Livecast. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Cody, and I was from Thibodaux, Louisiana, but I recently moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. How
are
you guys doing?
Hey, not bad, Cody. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good.
That's good to hear. Before I have a couple questions, but before I ask them, I just want to say, if Kylan can predict that TNA would rebrand itself to GFW, then I'm willing to bet his willing to go on his judgment that Bruce Pritchard will be taken off television very, very soon. Because I'm sorry, he's a garbage character on TV, and it's especially it frustrates me even more when we talk about that X Division segment between Sanjay Dutt and Trevor Lee, because it's just like the right characters, but they're switched. Like if it was an issue where Trevor Lee stole the championship and was running from the law with Sanjay trying to get his title back, that's fine. But it's just terrible that the Sanjay is the champion and you're just keeping him off of, like, trying to keep him out of the ring, just out of the title, out of his hands. And it's ridiculous. And it frustrates me, especially since it's Bruce Pritchard that's at the helm in that storyline. And I just don't like him on television at all. I do have but my first question, you just, going off the MMA comments that y'all are talking about, and the reason why I'm asking this question is because I think it's so outrageous that it sounds like something GFW would do. And that's, you know, do you think that they specifically showed those comments to try to take the heat off El Patron?
In what way? It's just sort of like just run a distraction, you mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, maybe they succeeded because we've talked a lot less about El Patron tonight and I've been complaining about other things.
Because it's something that's so outrageous that I just really think that it's within the realm of possibility for GFW to do something like that.
I mean, it's a good point because it is so inexcusable. It is so just... It's just so inexcusable that maybe you're right. It just, because nothing makes sense. I don't know why what logical explanation you could come up with, if you're GFW, to why airing that was a positive.
Well, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, if you're trying, like, it's even weirder if you're trying to use that to kind of take the edge off El Patron, if you're still trying to push him, which I agree with you guys, they probably shouldn't be pushing him. But it sounds like it makes sense, some sort of sense in that way, because, like, you can't be asleep at the wheel with something like that. And that's, I feel like sometimes that's what they're doing. They're just falling asleep at the wheel and just not even paying attention to what they're doing.
Yeah, that's definitely what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, another, just onto like a more serious question. They were talking about, I think in the past couple of weeks, on who to put in Al Patron's place, whether it be Johnny Mundo or even Rey Mysterio. But y'all kind of mentioned this. I'm not sure if it was the last show or the show before. But I would be all for pushing Matt Sydal. And the reason why I'm saying that is because of something you mentioned in your report and something that you mentioned earlier in the show, and that's how you think that they're trying to push Desmond Xavier, which it's, you know, there's your, you have your X Division star there. And remember, you still have Low Key in the X Division itself. So I feel like at this point, you know, with those three stars and with the Super X Cup going on, you could take Matt Sydal and you could, you know, and you could maybe try to push him for the world title. And it also makes sense in that, you know, Bruce Pritchard, when he announced the match, said that it's for the winner of the match to get the title shot that he desires. So the way that I see it is, you know, we're all expecting, Matt Sydal to win an X Division title shot. But let's say he wins, he beats Bobby Lashley, and then he does a complete swerve and challenges El Patron for the GFW title. What do you guys thoughts on that?
I don't know about you, Andrew. I mean, I'd be fine with that. I think that's a fine way to go right now. Is Matt Sydal is a guy that you can, I think, put at the top of your card and feature on your show. And it's been a long time since he was featured in WWE. And yeah, he's on the indie scene and he's, you know, on other people's television shows. But I don't think that necessarily hurts you here. And like you sort of pointed out, Cody, I think the X Division, they're building it up. I mean, that's one of the things they're doing really well. They're building the X Division up to a point where there is some depth there again, whether it's Trevor Lee or Loki or some of the AAA guys they brought in, or a guy like Desmond Xavier who they're building up. And I think I read recently that DJZ is healthy again, so he could be returning soon. They have some depth in that X Division for the first time in a while. So I don't think you need Matt Sydal there. I wouldn't be opposed to them. I mean, if nothing else, it's a new face. I mean, one of the things that I think has been a little frustrating is they really haven't had many new faces that they've had around the top of their card. They've brought in several new faces to the show, but there hasn't really been a whole lot of guys that I would consider fresh faces at the top of the card. You know, it's EC3, it's Moose. El Patron has now been here, not overly long, but for long enough. It feels like it's been long enough. But I think that, you know, he would be a welcome, Sydal would be a welcome addition to the storylines going on near the top of the card. And Andrew, what are your thoughts on them utilizing him in that type of role? And because I sort of don't think he's really needed for the X Division right now.
I mean, yeah, the thing is there's so much like controversy and bad things going around with El Patron that they should probably take the title off him soon. Going back to Lashley would feel like a bit of a rerun maybe at this point. However, last week we also talked about this might mimic Eddie Edwards' angle too much. And the thing is they also kind of look like each other a little bit.
Yeah.
I think you guys are higher on Sydal than I am, which is fine. I just, he's just very uncharismatic, and his voice is, I don't know, his voice is too whiny for me. I'm fine with him as a mid-card player, but for me, he's just not a championship guy. But that's just my opinion.
I definitely think, though, Cody, like you said, I mean, they didn't really mention Rey Mysterio on this show, but if you were to bring in someone like a Mysterio, I think I would rather see them go with him in that role than Sydal. But, you know, if that can't happen until it sounds like the end of the year at the earliest, so they might need someone to sort of be a placeholder there until Mysterio's contractually able to appear.
Yeah, I get that. But it's just at the same time, you know, why not just push for somebody that you already have on your roster and see where that goes? And yeah, maybe they still sign Mysterio. Maybe they still sign Johnny Mundo. But at least now you have someone that you know that you can push. And like you said, there are a lot of guys on the roster, but they're just not really being utilized much. I mean, look at the six guys in that six man tag earlier tonight. What are they being used for? What are Kongo Kong and KM being used for? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, a lot of their mid card feels like they're just stuck in the mud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of great choices for who they could throw into that position as a top guy. So yeah, they've done it to themselves though.
Yeah, I could even see GSW doing something akin to the Bound for Glory series, but they just do it with tag teams instead, since they have so much of that talent on there, especially tag teams.
Yeah, they do. Especially I think if, I forget which member of Reno Scum was injured, but if they can get that team back healthy, that's another team you could throw into the mix. I think the talent exchange is going to help them too, with helping some of those guys keep fresh. They might have some guys that they're only able to bring in for one set of tapings, but the way their schedule is, that's five or six episodes, and you could sort of do a quick storyline and use some of those guys to get some of their main contracted guys over, whether it's tag teams or whether it's singles guys. So I think they have the potential to be in a good spot. I think they need to show us how they're going to execute it, though, because some of it just doesn't feel like it's working right now.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. So before I go, I wanted to ask one more quick question. How weird was it that you had EC3 wrestling for the Grand Championship and then a few segments later just coming out in a new change of clothes? I just thought that was weird. It felt like there was a WrestleMania, Triple H beat Sting in a grueling match and then just came out in a suit and tie after. I don't know. What did you guys think?
I don't think it wasn't as jarring to me because he had a towel on, so it sort of looked like, okay, you know, maybe he just, you know, he hit the showers, you just get out of the shower. I had more of an issue with the promo. I just don't know exactly what the purpose of it was. To sort of come out and gloat and then leave through the crowd was a little confusing. Andrew, what did you think of that whole segment where EC3 came down after he won and sort of interrupted the show to cut kind of a random promo where he talked to the belt and then left?
For some reason, I kind of liked it. Maybe it was just the randomness of it. I'm so down on that belt that just anything, that like somebody showing so much enthusiasm for it, I thought was kind of fun. I thought he was wearing jeans. Was he not? I can't even remember what he was wearing. So
I think he was, yeah.
Okay.
He had a towel over his neck, though. I think he threw it into the crowd.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess it didn't stand out to me, but I guess he just put on some pants and then called it a day at that point.
The thing that struck me is, like, is this the first inclination of EC3 slowly going crazy? A la, you know, Laurel Van Ness. Is EC3 going to become the next Laurel Van Ness where he just starts to slowly go mad? Although she didn't slowly go crazy. She went crazy all at one time and has remained there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it felt to me just a little weird, especially the way he was talking to the belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did seem a little off to me. Well, anyways, that's all I got for you guys tonight. Y'all are doing a great job. I always look forward to y'all top three segments. So y'all have a good night.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. You can give us a call and you can jump on the line just like Kyman and Cody did at 515-605-9345. Andrew and I are going to hit another break. When we come back, we'll have a couple of other news topics to discuss. We also have to get to our breakdown of tonight's episode, all the segments that we haven't talked about yet. And of course, Cody just mentioned our top three segment, our top three this week, top three trades we would make between WWE and GFW. So stick around. We'll have a lot more coming up here on this edition of the PW Torch Livecast.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
The bosses are going to be happy. This is the first time, I think, ever that we've hit every break on time on the show. We have a tendency Yeah. We have a tendency to blow through breaks, and all of a sudden I'm looking up and it's been a half an hour since we've taken a break. So this is going well. Let's take a quick look at a couple of other quick hit little news stories that I want to get to before we get to our show rundown. The first one was, we've talked about Alberto El Patron. Well, him, he was on Busted Open Radio on Sirius XM. I believe this was earlier today with Paige. It may have been yesterday, but I'm almost positive it was earlier today. Busted Open is every weekday on Sirius XM. And they were on the show to discuss their incident at the airport. The main theme to all this, and I don't have any quotes down in front of me, but I didn't hear the interview. I read a recap of what was discussed. Essentially, Andrew, it's our fault. It's the internet's fault. We did it. Yeah. And we took something and blew it out of proportion. And they, I think, would have you to believe that every single thing that happens with them, whether it's this incident at an airport or the incident where they were fighting on the streets of Las Vegas, or the incident where El Patron got stabbed, it's all the internet's fault, and we blow it out of proportion. And then one of the hosts even asked Paige about her family's reaction to it. You know, her father was outspoken on social media, I believe on Facebook, her brothers as well. And again, it was all the internet. They were reacting to the internet, and the internet blew it out of proportion. So I think we were emailing about this earlier, and you said, well, you pretty much, you know, I'm not sure you can really trust anything that comes out of their mouths right now. And that's sort of, I mean, this didn't change my mind at all. I mean, this to me felt like people trying to cover their tracks.
Yeah, I'd like to publicly apologize for everything I've done for the Page and Alberto El Patron. It's my fault. You know, what struck me is that, you know, like you said, I don't trust anything they say. I mean, they've been caught in lies. I mean, she blamed a woman for throwing the drink, you know.
Exactly.
Why should we believe anything they said? Yeah, the stabbing story had like four different things. You know, Bully Ray was on that show. I have not listened to it. He's this big, tough guy. He's this bully. Why didn't he call them out on their crap? You know, like, why let them use his show as like a PR spin instead of just being like, come on. Like, you know, come on. So that was just kind of disappointing. But man, it just never ends with those two, and they don't take any responsibility. And they were, it's just sickening, really.
I mean, we've discussed it, I feel like, at length. But they need to get away from each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I mean. I know what they were trying to do on the show. They were trying to just blow it over and say, oh yeah, nothing really happened. We got in an argument just like any couple gets into an argument. Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I've been married for almost 10 years. Well, let's see. Hopefully my wife doesn't listen to this, as I don't recall how long I've been married. I've been married for 9 years, and we've gotten in arguments, you know, plenty of times. It's never ended with her throwing a drink in my face.
I have been in public many times in my life, and I have never seen a drink thrown in somebody else's face, like, ever.
I've never been stabbed either.
I'm sure it happens, but I've never seen it.
I've never been stabbed. I've never had the police called after I've been arguing after we've been arguing on a sidewalk. I mean, it's just, it's one thing after another. And like you said, like, there just doesn't seem to be any willingness to take responsibility. And I don't know, I mean, how much. Not to blame people here. Paige comes across as very immature, I think, in these situations. And part of that, I mean, part of that could be her age. I mean, what's she, 23 or 24? Yeah. I mean, she's in her early 20s. A lot of people in their early 20s are immature. But Alberto El Patron is in his mid to late 30s, I believe. This is a guy.
I think he's 40.
Is he 40? So, yeah, I mean, this is a guy who should know better. And it just, the whole situation seems very toxic, and it almost, the way she was defending him when the incident first happened, was very uncomfortable to me. You know, almost like, Even if she was the one that did something wrong, and I mean, it sounds like from the police reports, and I think Pro Wrestling Sheet had some reports where the police were investigating her and not necessarily him. There's just something about this that just doesn't feel right, and I can't help but feel very uncomfortable every single time it gets brought up. And it's part of the reason why I think GFW just needs to move away from this guy altogether. Like, not only move the title off him, move away from him altogether, because I don't think it's going to get better, and I think it's going to take a long time, and there's going to have to be a lot that they do to repair their public image and make people feel comfortable seeing them on TV again, or at least him on TV again, because it's a weird feeling every week when he's prominently featured.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of damning within a few months if WWE does not put Paige back on air, because she said she's almost ready to go. I mean, that's going to say a lot if they're not going to put her on air, and I don't think they will. I don't think they want that controversy. I don't think they want all those problems. And if, you know, GFW continues to feature El Patron, I mean, that's just going to be a bad situation all around. I mean, yeah, I mean, why would they? Her husband, like, publicly bashes them all the time.
Yeah.
It's bad. I don't see it getting better. I don't want to tell anybody how to live their life, but they should get away from each other.
And WWE doesn't need to put her on TV. I mean, they're
exactly.
They've got plenty of women on their show. You know, you're really only filling. They're only really promoting two at a time anyway, on each brand. Mm-hmm. I'd almost say they don't have room for her. The other news topic that I wanted to hit on quickly was the story coming out of Raw. I think Raw was in Nashville, I believe, on the 24th of July. And there was a story making the rounds afterwards of Karen Jarrett and Braun Strowman ran into each other at a bar in Nashville. The way the story goes, Karen Jarrett asked Strowman for an autograph for her son. This is her son with Kurt Angle. And Strowman gave her, it may have been an expletive-laden response. And Karen was on the GFW conference call this week. It was Karen Jarrett with Laurel Van Ness and Sienna. They were the members of the conference call yesterday. And she was asked about this incident, and because it's sort of taken on a life of its own, and she addressed it. And her quote here was, and this is a direct quote, it's a little long, but she said, quote, "Oh my goodness, I can clear the air. It was a silly incident where you have two people in the wrestling business playing their characters, being silly, and it got blown way out of proportion. And the fact that the two of us are still in the news and it's still being talked about, that's a question that you took the time to ask, I think is hysterical, to be honest with you. It's silliness. It's the wrestling business. We had fun with it, and somebody took it and turned it into something more than what it was." That sounds to me like she's trying to make it go away, because the versions of the story that are out there are not anything where it was just two people playing their characters. One of the stories was that he basically told her to get away from him, again, with some four-letter words in there, and then she blew up at him and said that she was going to tell Kurt, because it was Kurt's son that he said no to, and then one of the versions of the story was Braun Strowman got down on his knees and begged her not to tell Kurt Angle. This whole story to me is strange. The biggest reason why it's so strange to me is, okay, if Kurt and Karen's son wanted Braun Strowman's autograph, Kurt Angle is with Braun Strowman every week. Why didn't Kurt just ask for his kid? I mean, Kurt is literally working with the guy every single Monday. There's something going on here. And I'm not sure. I mean, this might blow over and we'll never get the whole story, but I just don't feel like we're getting the whole story.
I don't think so either. I mean, I don't know if it's as extreme as him getting down on his knees and begging for forgiveness.
Which is just strange for me to envision.
Yeah, and even if it is, like, how is he playing his character?
Yeah, exactly.
Braun Strowman, he doesn't get on his knees and beg Roman Reigns for forgiveness and, you know, for tipping him over in an ambulance. But, I there's got to be more to this. I don't know what it is. I'm strangely fascinated by it, and I wish there was some cell phone footage of it out there. But yeah, I don't think we'll ever fully know what it is. I mean, you know, she's doing the right thing in the sense that she's trying to spin it as it was a big joke. It's a, oh, it's a big, you know, it's funny, move away, you know, like that. But, she's been known to be a bit of a hothead too, though. So,
well, that was my thing.
Yeah, there's definitely, yeah.
You know, her spinning it as, oh, it was just two people. It was silly. That almost makes me believe, okay, she may have been the one that was a little more aggressive in all of this, and she's trying to just make it go away.
Yeah, I would bet it did not start as a joke. It would be my guess.
Yeah, I just don't know, like, what could they possibly have been joking about? Yeah. Especially those two. It seems very, the whole thing is very, very strange. All right, well, we don't have to go to our next break yet, even though we are on time. But let's start going through the rest of this week's show and sort of hit on some of the segments that we haven't talked about yet, some of the matches and some of the segments that we haven't talked about yet. We talked a little bit about Trevor Lee, but Trevor Lee lost to one of the Mumbai Cats in 2 minutes. Of course, we found out it wasn't a Mumbai Cat. It was Sanjay Dutt who pulled the switcheroo. The Mumbai Cat was down at ringside. He rolled under the ring. Sanjay Dutt, dressed as another Mumbai Cat, rolled out from under the ring. He ends up pinning Trevor Lee to get the win, I guess. I was very confused by this segment because Sanjay Dutt's whole thing is, you know, he's the rightful champion and he just wants his belt back. So instead of taking Trevor Lee to the mat and knocking him down and doing whatever, hitting whatever moves he wants to hit, and then just taking his belt back, he thought it was more important to pin him and beat him in a match that he wasn't involved in. And then he allowed Trevor Lee to roll to the outside, still wearing the X Division belt. It seemed to me that if you're Sanjay Dutt, you would have had a pretty good opportunity to take your belt back, and he just didn't do it.
Yeah, this is kind of dumb. It just goes back to GFW's reliance on just corny humor, you know, just bringing back the Mumbai Cats and, oh, it'll be funny. I don't know. It's just silly. And like we keep saying, I mean, Trevor Lee deserves better. He shouldn't be in this kind of just corny, humor. He could be worth so much more to the company that it's just a shame.
Totally 100% agree. Then a little later on in the show, EC3 beat Moose. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but EC3 beat Moose for the Impact Grand Championship with a decision. EC3 won the first round 29-28. Moose won the second round also 29-28. Then in the third round, Scott D'Amore scored at 10-10. Dutch Mantel scored at 10-10. And Bruce Pritchard scored at 10-8 for EC3. So again, Bruce Pritchard, a heel. I just don't know why. For some reason, he's aligning himself with Trevor Lee and EC3. But I'm sure we'll get an explanation at some point. I thought this was a little weird, though. Again, when we've talked about the dynamics of the Grand Championship match, how it takes the flow out of it a little bit. But am I mistaken that this is the first time since they came up with this belt that we have seen rounds end in a draw?
That's the first time I can recall it happening.
I was trying to think of another time that it happened. And so I'm not saying that you can't have judges score rounds a draw, but the first time it ever happens, two judges do it. It felt a little weird to me.
Yeah. Had they both scored it the other way, like both giving it to Moose, then Pritchard's heel turn doesn't mean anything. So it's kind of very forced and silly. Just more silliness, really.
Yeah. I just thought it was real strange. I mean, obviously they're trying to mimic the, you know, judge controversy that you see in boxing and MMA every once in a while, but it just didn't. I mean, it didn't feel like a big controversy to me. It felt like a heel doing a heel thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just goes back to nobody really cares about the Grand Championship, so it's hard to get really invested in Moose going to take it back. Like, I would rather just see him move up to the heavyweight division and just, you know, be glad that he no longer has to fight in those matches.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I don't really feel like I need to see him come back and try to get a win. Suicide, yeah. Braxton Sutter and Grado beat Mario Baccara, Falaba, and KM. this, you know, we talked a little bit about it, sort of just felt like a big random tag team match that was thrown together for no real reason.
Yeah, they keep doing that every week now, where there's at least one, I believe, six-man match the past 3 weeks at least, where it's just six random people. You know, Falabas hanging out backstage, they grab him, go grab Suicide. He hasn't been on TV in a few months. Go see what Braxton Sutter's up to, you know? And it's just, it just feels so inconsequential. And it's, at the beginning of the match, Braxton Sutter is dancing with Grado. So it's like, well, he's been a heel lately. Why is he doing this? And
then
at the end of
the
match, he goes back to his, yeah. And at the end of the match, oh, he's got to grab Allie and get out of there. I mean, it's just weak. You know, be consistent. And again, Grado versus Kongo Kong. I don't know. That's not really doing much for me. Is it doing anything for you?
Not really. I mean, at least Kongo Kong is being treated like a monster. I mean, if I were to give
that's
it at
true,
least
yeah.
some points, it's like, okay, well, at least they're treating him like this big monster. He also beat up Eddie Edwards earlier in the show. Eddie Edwards was scheduled to take on Eli Drake. I missed that part in the rundown, but Eli Drake was scheduled to take on Eddie Edwards.
Oh, yeah.
And as Eli Drake was in the ring, they cut backstage and Kongo Kong was just beating the living crap out of Eddie Edwards. So that match never actually happened. So, I mean, one positive I take away from the show, they're booking Kongo Kong like a big monster heel, and they should.
I thought it was kind of funny or slash sad how they're like, who could possibly take this guy down? And it's like, oh, well, Patron did about a month ago.
Yeah, exactly.
In a meaningless match. just another mistake that they made that they shouldn't have done. But yeah, I guess, that is good that they are at least trying to correct that somewhat at the present moment.
We already talked about the main event, but one more thing I wanted to get your thoughts on before we take our next commercial break and come back with our top three. Can we talk about how dumb Alberto El Patron's stomp off the middle turnbuckle is? That you literally watch Santana set himself up to take the finisher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody can take that move without literally setting themselves up for it and then standing there with their hands on the ropes waiting for him to jump on them. Maybe that's what the, maybe that's what the Charlie Rosa MMA guy was talking about. Maybe he watched Alberto El Patron do that move over and over again. He's like, yeah, well, you know, that is what it is, but we're real fighting. That looks so fake. It's just, what an ugly move.
And it's not just that he looked up at Patron like, no, don't do it.
Yeah.
Drop your arms.
let go of the ropes, and then you're fine.
I have this habit now when he goes up top, I immediately start counting in my mind. I counted 4 seconds. It could have been closer to five that he held himself in place. I know once in WWE he got to like 7 or 8, but it's just awful. Yeah. I mean, the person taking the move, it takes more effort for them to hold themselves in place than to let go of the ropes. So, yeah, it continues to be the worst move in wrestling that I can think of.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing where, like, okay, someone on the creative team or the bookings team or whatever should have, or just the editor should have caught something in that Lashley video and said, no, you know, yeah, we're not airing this. There needs to be an agent or someone who looks at that move and says, man, you got to come up with something different. That just looks terrible. And it's like, I don't know if they're just if they're afraid to tell the guys too much and they don't want to get anybody mad or what, but I mean, that move looks terrible.
I'm surprised that nobody in WWE talked to him about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know that. Yeah. Yeah. Cause that turned into his finish. Like the cross arm breaker, I think is pretty cool.
Me too. I like that.
You know, it would hurt. It would hurt in real life, but that double stomp, I guess it would hurt in real life, but it just looks dumb. I mean, just move out of the way.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
Really,
if nothing else, like drop your arm. So like if you let go, yeah, you might sort of hang backwards there in the turnbuckle, but he's not going to stomp you.
Yeah. He'll just have to like jump on your leg or something.
He'd have to get down or something. I mean, it's just like, or if you have the energy to hold yourself up in the ropes, like just duck out the side of the ropes.
The only thing I can think of that is close to me in terms of how dumb it is Big Show's WMD, just because it's a punch and he could pull that out at any point.
Yeah.
So those are my two worst ones, I would say. But yeah, El Patron probably takes it just because the punch would actually hurt quite a bit. Quite a bit.
Yeah. I wanted to get that off my chest too. This is the might as well get all the complaints on the table with this episode. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take
understandable.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take another break and then come back with our top three. Our top three this week are trades we would make between WWE and GFW. We'll be back right after this on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast. I am Mike McMahon. He is Andrew Socek. It's time for our top three this week. And our top three is the top three trades we would make between GFW and WWE. I'm not going to lie to you. I was a little all over the place with this. I maybe was a little unconventional, but it's all things that I think make sense. What was your number three trade that you would make between these two companies right now?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that because I think I'm all over the place as well. I don't think many people would even bother thinking of these two. But for this trade, I'm going to go R-Truth for Robbie E. As we talk, this is supposed to benefit both guys, both companies. R-Truth is just one of the worst characters in WWE. He has been for years in my mind. But when he was in TNA, he was excellent. I mean, he looked like a future star of the business as Ron the Truth Killian, doing great work. So kind of like Goldust is kind of turning his career around in a sense, or at least he was. I would like to see R-Truth go back. I know he's 45, but maybe just give him a year or two to try to be a serious heel once again. I think he did that with John Cena about 5-6 years ago, and I thought it went pretty well.
Yeah.
Considering he'd been a joke for years before that. So I would like to see him go out kind of where he made a name for himself and, just see if he's got anything left, if he can be inspired once more. As for Robbie E, also, I think he has one of the worst gimmicks in wrestling. I mean, Jersey Shore was canceled in 2012, maybe, and he's still holding on to that gimmick. I think he's a talented guy though. I don't know if he would be good enough maybe for Raw or SmackDown in Vince McMahon's eyes, but for sure, I think he could go to NXT and just work with those guys there. Maybe, you know, come up with a new character, try to turn things around and just get a fresh start and get away from Global Force Wrestling, get away from that terrible gimmick and just see if he can start a new life for himself somewhere else.
I don't disagree with you. I agree with you. I think Robbie E, and they look like they were going to try to do something with him during the world title series a couple years ago. I think they gave him some big wins in that tournament. And I was actually a little excited, like, okay. And they were taking him more seriously. He wasn't doing the goofy. I mean, he still had the same gear and everything, but he wasn't doing really the goofy over the top Jersey Shore thing. He was trying to be taken seriously as a wrestler. And I thought it was working. And then they came back after that tournament was over and they just sort of completely ignored it.
I can't even remember what he was last doing. He was back into comedy and he had like pants.
Yeah.
He changed up his look slightly, but it still was very much going back in time to a gimmick that had already played itself out.
I went with Low-Key. And again, I want to also point out that I made this, I came up with these before watching the show tonight. So my rationale here was a little different. So I went with Low-Key for Natalya. And Low-Key, I'll explain the Low-Key one first. And again, this was before he was included in the main event angle on the show. But he had been off the show for a while. I mean, he came back and he was doing some good stuff. X Division champion. I thought his run since coming back to GFW around, what was it, April maybe, has been pretty good. It's been pretty solid. I looked at it as, okay, here's a guy that WWE could use, that GFW, before tonight's episode, hadn't been using in a couple of weeks. And here's a guy that WWE could certainly use for their cruiserweight division. They don't really have anyone right now to go up against Neville. I mean, I think we saw Neville versus Austin Aries as many times as we did because they didn't really have anybody else to put in that spot. And they're trying to get Akira Tozawa there. I don't know if it really feels like he belongs there yet, though. But you could put Loki in on 205 Live in their cruiserweight division right away in a match against Neville, and it's going to feel like a big deal. So I think certainly he benefits from that, and WWE benefits from that. And then Natalya, I mean, I know she's getting a prime spot coming up at SummerSlam. She's the number one contender. She's going to wrestle Naomi for the SmackDown Women's title. But she's been such an afterthought for so long in that company. I mean, she was left out of the women's revolution a couple of years ago. They've put so much focus on Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Bayley and Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch. I mean, Natalya's sort of been overlooked and forgotten about. Even though she's getting the spotlight now, I think you could bring Natalya in with her name value, both as, you know, having been in WWE for a while and just the heart name. You could put her and immediately have her come into a women's division in GFW that really right now is only Sienna and Rosemary. There's really no one else there. I think her and Sienna both have, you know, in a legitimate fighting style kind of. I think just those two together would have some really good matches together.
Yeah, I like this. I mean, earlier today I was thinking of Natalya as well. She was probably on my list of people I was thinking of trading over. I left her off only because of this SummerSlam match, but otherwise, like you said, very badly overlooked. She's been playing pretty bad characters. She got stuck with the Great Khali for quite a bit, and she could kind of take over Gail Kim's role, just kind of this veteran presence.
Yeah.
In the division. And yeah. And I think she'd have good matches with Sienna, Rosemary. Those are exciting. Loki, I'm, as you know, if you listen to the show, I'm very high on Loki, and, it'd be good to see him go back also just to erase the Caval run he had where he was with, Laycool. Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I think in another wrestling universe, he's a superstar somewhere. He was like the successor to Rey Mysterio. And I think at one point he was slated to play Rey Mysterio, an imposter one. But I think he's so talented, but he just can't quite get along with management. So I would like to see him eventually go back there if they're willing to take him back and if he's open to it. So, yes, I like that trade.
What did you have as your number two?
I'm going with a trade of big bearded men for this one. I'm taking Bram from Global Force Wrestling, and he is going to SmackDown for Luke Harper. I'm high on both of these guys, but I think Luke Harper is on a downward slope in WWE, and I think he's past the point of recovering. Yeah, he's just been defined down for so long. Yeah. He had that brief intercontinental run. Otherwise, he means nothing. He was a henchman. He broke out, and then he just jobbed and jobbed and jobbed. He might be behind the fashion files thing, but even then, it's going to, you know, it's well-worn territory if he teams up with Eric Rowan. So, I'd like to see him start anew, ditch the pants, ditch the shirt, get a new look, maybe get a manager. I don't know. Maybe go with Jim Mitchell or something.
Yeah.
And as for Bram, I just think he's so underutilized. I think, you know, he did have trouble in WWE. He got fired. They could put him back with the Ascension, but I don't think that's worth anybody's time to do that. But he's a good talker. He's got a good presence about him. I think he would make a good upper card guy on SmackDown. He could have wrestled John Cena had he stuck around, but I think there's plenty of people he could mix it up with and be kind of the creepy character on that brand, as opposed to, say, Bray Wyatt on Raw. So I am moving those two.
I like that. Yeah, and I think that benefits both guys. It should benefit both shows, too. Giving them some different people to work with. I went with another big guy, and then I went off the beaten path a little bit, and there's a little bit of a caveat to it. But I would trade Abyss for Paul Heyman. The caveat being, the caveat being, not only do I get Paul Heyman the manager, but I get Paul Heyman the booker. If I get both, I would do this trade. And the reason being, okay, so Abyss has got, is not even Abyss anymore. I mean, he made an appearance in Slammiversary, but he's Joseph Park. But Abyss is a character that Vince McMahon just loves to push. I mean, that type of character, whether it was Mick Foley, whether it was Undertaker, whether it was Kane, whether it was Umaga, the big monster characters have always been pushed in WWE. They haven't been pushed for very, I mean, the Undertaker and Kane were, but their personas changed. The big monster doesn't really seem to have longevity in WWE, but it's a character that for runs Vince McMahon will push and will push to the top. So I think Abyss could go to WWE and have a fresh start, you know, sort of like a Bray Wyatt type character, but a little more edgier, a little more hardcore. I don't know if they let him go very far in that direction, but I think that with Abyss's size, that just that menacing look, I think the WWE would do something with him. Probably not for a long period, but I think they could get a year. And the other thing too is Abyss is on the older side of in terms of age on any roster. So I think he's another one where he's either in his late 30s or early 40s. So they don't really have a ton of time with him anyway. But I think they could get a really good solid year out of him against against some of their bigger guys. And do some good stuff. It's just the type of character that they seem to like to push. And then Paul Heyman, I would want him as a manager to be a mouthpiece for some of these guys. And not only be a mouthpiece for some of the guys who have a hard time cutting promos, like a Bobby Lashley or some others, but also help those guys with their promos. And not only that, but I want to make sure, if I have Paul Heyman, I'm not only taking the manager, I want him on my booking team. Because as we've talked about, I think it needs some help. So, and I still think Paul Heyman, if everything you read, when you read about things that he comes up with, suggestions he comes up with, he still has his finger on the pulse of what the audience wants, I think. So if you were able to, and he's not booking at all with WWE. I mean, I think from what I understand, he'll give suggestions from time to time, but it's not like he's on the writing staff in any capacity. The last time he was really in charge and I think you fully executing his vision, it was when SmackDown was at its height, you know, back where, I mean, we're talking 10 years ago, well, more than 10 years ago now. New ECW, he wasn't really allowed to do what he wanted to do. So I think if you could get Paul Heyman and let him do what he wants, let him execute his vision while also being a character that cuts promos, that's a home run for GFW.
I would trade Paul Heyman for 75% of the professional roster straight up. this is probably a list for another day, but I think the most excited I ever have been for TNA were those rumors of Paul Heyman coming in to lead creative. And he was talking about bringing in Daniel Bryan, and firing everyone over 40, except one guy. I mean, to this day, that still bothers me. Like, what could have been, for the company and himself?
If Dixie Carter gave the keys to Paul Heyman instead of Hulk Hogan.
Oh God. I mean, imagine where the ratings would be right now. They'd have to be at least over one still if he was still in charge. Yeah. It would just have to be.
I would think so.
And Abyss, I did consider Abyss too for trading because I would like to see him get that run there. He was offered a deal probably 10 years ago as well, maybe not that long ago to fight The Undertaker. To work a program with him, so he never jumped over there. With Kane running for mayor, Undertaker probably retired. Vince doesn't really have that creepy character, except for Bray Wyatt, whose fake laughter is annoying me more and more by the week. So I would like to see Abyss join the company, work a year or two. And as weird as it might be, he would work a heavier schedule in WWE, but it might be better for his body because he's not going to take any thumbtacks. He's not going to go through all these, he's not going to be hit with a chair a bunch of times. So, I would like to see him one or two years, have a run in WWE and then just kind of go out that way. And then if things go for worse, he can always play comedy too. And I think Vince would probably get a kick out of his, Joseph Park act as well.
Yeah, me too. What did you have as your number one trade?
Number one is two guys, kind of at different points of their careers, but both could use a boost right now. I am going Eli Drake for Dolph Ziggler. As we saw tonight, Eli Drake was on the show for 30 seconds and he didn't do anything. He was involved in the Swole feud. And by the way, that's just kind of disappeared and forgotten about.
Thank God.
Which is fine. Yeah. I think that's one loose thread I'll just not even bring up. But
I'm fine leaving that one untied.
I'm not gonna tweet at them to bring the Swole guys back and finish that story. Eli Drake, I think, is a potential main eventer someday in some promotion. He's got charisma. He's a great talker. He's not a great wrestler yet, but he does seem like he could easily work the WWE style, which is where I believe he was trained in NXT for a bit. Sean Richter, maybe. I'm not sure if that's the right name, but yeah,
Eli Drake. So. Yeah, no, I think so.
Very talented. Was it? Oh, okay. Yeah, just still young, good look, a great talker, and I think would fit in on SmackDown. He'd be like the equivalent of The Miz over on Raw. You could give him his own talk show, too. As for Dolph Ziggler, he is a guy I grew tired of probably two or three years ago. Some of it's his fault. A lot of it is on creatives. He's just been out there time and time again. He is in an environment where he's grown stale. But he's still, I mean, he's a very, very excellent wrestler, probably the best bumper in the business. He just needs to get away from WWE. You know, a move to Raw is not going to do anything. I would like to see him go somewhere else. So Global Force can treat him as a huge star right out of the gate, which would probably be over pushing him, but it would give him a chance to do something new and to work with fresh opponents and new environments, which is, I think, what he badly needs at this point in his career.
I went in a little different direction, and I traded two guys that are at the top of the card for each company. I went with AJ Styles for EC3. And I wanted to come up with, okay, if WWE is going to be okay with giving AJ Styles to GFW, they're going to want someone in return. Mm-hmm. And I think that EC3 is 6 or 7 years younger. So the mindset could, number one, be, okay, we're going to have EC3. If we do this trade, if you're WWE, we're going to have EC3 for a longer period of time. And EC3 mm-hmm. just is more, strikes me as more of the WWE style of wrestler. I think he wrestles more of a WWE style. I think he has the look and definitely the physique more of what WWE generally looks for. So I think he's a guy that they would take back, because obviously they had him, but I think he's a guy that they would take back and actually do something with. And then AJ Styles, I mean, obviously from a TNA standpoint or from a GFW standpoint, AJ Styles is a guy that I think of all the guys that have left, he's the one you want back the most, because he was with you from the beginning. I mean, you could have Samoa Joe too, but AJ Styles is the one guy that is like the missing history link that I think could be good for GFW. They have to forget a lot of that TNA history. Don't get me wrong, but he's the one guy that is a legacy guy. I think he was almost always identified as a TNA guy. I mean, yeah, he was with WCW for a little bit, but so many people identified him as being homegrown TNA talent that I think it would benefit to have him back on the show. And obviously, look, he's one of the best in the world right now. I mean, clearly, they'd benefit from having him back on the show. So I think that trade benefits both. I think WWE, yeah, they lose a top guy in AJ Styles, but you know what? I think they would treat EC3. I think now they would treat EC3 as a top guy, given his look, his persona, how he can talk, and how he wrestles more of their style. I think he's almost a better fit for WWE. And then, you know, long term, he's 6 or 7 years younger, so they'd have him for a longer period of time.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, it's very like sports like, you know, do you want somebody who's going to be a superstar right now and they're going to have like 2 good years
left?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe AJ has more than that, or somebody who's going to be a star for years. For sure. EC3 is at least intercontinental level. And in the era of Jinder Mahal, all bets are off. He could be champ on SmackDown, day one. So, Yeah, I'd say there's no doubt that EC3 is coming back someday. He's just too good, and he, like you said, he's feels very WWE-like, and I think eventually they're going to really want him back. And I see him as one of the few guys that's going to skip NXT altogether and just jump to Raw or SmackDown someday. So, and like you said, it'd be great to kind of see AJ Styles once again. It would be a huge boost for Global Force, just like perception line, and to kind of see him right off into the sunset, kind of where he made a name for himself. That would be kind of cool.
And even though he's been treated like a top guy with WWE, I for some reason, I still feel like Vince McMahon looks at someone like AJ Styles and just says, ah, but he's so small.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. Yeah.
All right, well, we are almost out of time. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here for this week and hit the VIP portion of the show?
I don't think so. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-A. Otherwise, check out pwpodcast.com every single day.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon, PW. For VIP members, you'll hear more of Andrew and I if you go over to the VIP feed. We're going to be talking John Cena, Shinsuke Nakamura, Brock Lesnar, John Jones, plenty of other Universal title talk, but also Cena, Nakamura, because we talked about that last week too, over on our VIP exclusive after show for VIP members. If you're not a VIP member, you should be one. Come join us over on the VIP side of things. Here's more about PW Torch VIP. And if you are VIP, head over to the VIP feed right now to check out Andrew and I on the VIP after show right here on the PW Torch livecast. Thank you guys for listening this week. Thank you guys for calling this week. We'll talk again next Thursday right after Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.